Joining us now, the head golf professional from TPC Louisiana, soon to host the Zurich Classic, Mr. Brian Long. Brian, welcome into the golf shop.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to this event. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what you got going on in terms of preparation. I know this is your busy time, and we appreciate having you on.
Sure, thanks. So the week before the tournament, the course actually closes down. I know some tour venues don't have the luxury of being closed for 7 days, but I know our superintendent certainly loves that and the extra freedom and flexibility gives him. But basically, golf course maintenance is spending a lot of time fine-tuning some details on the golf course, so some mulching, edging bunkers, pressing up the sand, reducing the height of cut in the greens. We've got a bunch of staff that's finalizing the tournament venues, tents, chalets, merchandise tents. We've got to detop a bunch of golf carts and get practice balls ready and build player back storage. And certainly our food and beverage operation really transforms to put on a world-class dining experience for the tour players and their families.
Yeah, so tell me, your regular players must love missing a week of golf. How does that go over?
Yeah, so it's April is peak season down here in New Orleans. So it's unfortunate that we do have to close, but it's one of the great things is being able to see the best players in the world come visit a facility that anyone can come play.
So that's what you tell them? Does that work?
Yeah, for the most part, yes. You know, we've got some great arrangements with some of the local golf courses that allow our annual pass holders to go play some other facilities in the area. But for a lot of our regular golfers, they just like to come out and watch the best players in the world make it look so easy.
Yeah, and they appreciate it. I mean, I'm lucky enough to be a tournament director of a Symetra Tour event up here in Charlotte, but our host course has 218s, and we still get some people who gripe. But by and large, our regular players and our members love the fact that we're hosting this event, and they'll put up with a little bit of disruption in their play in order to get out there and see these people, you know, really put on a show.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the tour event is such a big deal to us, and it really helps us maintain the course throughout the years and in the great condition it normally is.
Well, and are you able to lean on the rest of the TPC network for things? Because there are a lot of TPC, you know, courses that host these events. Do you guys get together and talk about best practices and things like that? It must give you a little bit of an advantage over a purely independent course.
Sure, yeah, absolutely we do. I know mainly in the golf course maintenance department, they get support from some regional agronomists and some assistant superintendents from other TPC facilities. On the food and beverage side, they'll bring in some culinary staff from some of the other clubs. But on the golf side, it's really our staff that's with us year-round. We do have some national support folks that make some visits to us throughout the year that really help keep the operation heading in the right direction, and certainly they're available for some tournament support and sharing of best practices.
Well, and for those of us who've never been down there, never seen the course, tell me a little bit about its layout. What makes TPC Louisiana different than any other course?
So we're a P9 design. I know our general manager, Luke Fairbaugh, he likes to compare us to TPC Sawgrass and how it's a great tune-up for the players' championship. And you'll see a lot of what you see there with pot bunkers, some of them strategically placed in the middle of the fairway for, you know, the player who drives a 310 down the middle and might get a little unlucky and drive to one of those pot bunkers. Railroad ties on some of the bulkheads around greens. The golf course here has a lot of fairway bunkers, either on one side of the fairway or the other. And Mr. Dye did a great job designing the golf course where you may have one hole where it favors a draw off the tee and a fade into the green, and then the next hole it's the other way where it's a fade off the tee and a draw into the green. So, you know, the golf course doesn't necessarily set up great for somebody who draws the ball or fades the ball, but the player who's able to work their ball either way, typically are the guys who are up there on the leaderboard.
Well, speaking of those guys, I mean, who has a game that seems to set up for your course pretty well?
Well, certainly look at Justin Rose, who shot 22 under last year.
Yeah.
Say that sets up pretty well for him. But, you know, even as low as he went at 22 under, we had guys right there at 21, 20, 19 under par. So, you would think at 22 running away with it, but he really didn't. So, you know, I'd certainly look at Jason Day, number one player in the world. You know, it's hard to see who's playing better than him right now. Ricky Fowler, who's number five in the world, is playing really well. Certainly somebody to look at. And Brandon Grace, who just won the RBC, and he's ranked, I believe, number 11 in the world. So he's somebody to really watch. But there's just so many great players. And, you know, Rookie of the Year, Daniel Berger's in the field. A lot of Louisiana favorites, David Toms, Andrews, finally Kaufman are players to watch. And David Toms always seems to play well here and has the crowd behind him.
Well, all right, so when you guys are sitting in meetings between last year's 22-under winner and this year, how much discussion goes into, hey, is that score too low, and what can we do to bring it more in control? Or do you love it because it's exciting?
You know, I don't know that the tour is trying to get a certain score, you know, just trying to identify the best player. And a lot of it has to do with the weather and the golf course conditions. You know, last year we had a ton of rain, and it was so soft the players could just fire the flags. You know, for me as a golfer, when it's wet, I'm thinking, oh, the course is going to play long, it's going to play tougher. But sometimes for the tour players, they just attack the pins. It doesn't matter where you put it, they can make a ton of birdies. So, you know, for us being this early in the year, it's tough for us to grow rough. So our rough's only going to be 2-2.5 inches, which isn't really much defense for the guy who hits a little bit offline. So a lot of it's going to depend upon the wind and how strong it is. But, you know, certainly the winner I would anticipate will be in double digits.
Well, so when you're in a position to sit on a score in the clubhouse on Sunday, what would you think is safe? I mean, gosh, 22 under you would have thought was safe, and you said there were guys crawling at him. What do you think is safe?
I would think if you get to 20, you're safe. But last year, that would have given you third or fourth place. So,
yeah, you get to 20, you can have a second beer normally, but not expecting any sort of playoff. But, yeah, you get a guy 22 under. You never know.
Yeah, you know, the back nine here at TPC Louisiana, there's a lot of opportunities for birdies. I mean, number 10 is a pretty easy hole. 11's a par 5. A lot of players are going to go for 2. In years past, hole 13 is a par 4 that's drivable. It sounds long at 377, but they may move the tees up 20 yards, and it's a pretty big dogleg. So you may get some players going for the green. Somebody could chip one in for eagle. And then just 16, 17, 18. 16 is not terribly long. 17 is a tricky par 3, but 18 is a par 5, and even at 580, 590 yards, it seems like every player goes to the green in 2. You know, I don't have the shot length data, but some of these longer hitters are hitting irons in that green. So
right.
I wouldn't be surprised to see an eagle or 2 and certainly a lot of birdies that are coming down the stretch.
Well, I'm looking at the scorecard right now, and I'm sort of a fan of carnage. What stretch here could I expect to see some guys get into trouble, other guys rise? Where are the hot spots on this course?
You know, on the front nine, holes 3 and 4 are difficult. 5's not too bad, but hole number 6 is one of the most difficult holes in the golf course. I remember 7 or 8 years ago, I was playing a practice round with our local tour player, Kelly Gibson, and the winds were blowing 20, 30 miles right in our face. And I hit driver, 3-wood, 7-iron into the par 4. And hit all 3 of them as good as I could, and you know, walked away with a 2-putt bogey there. So that's a hole that you know, you don't get off to a good start, you can really start to get frustrated before kind of turning around. But then on the back nine, I would say holes 12, and I think the 15th hole played is the most difficult hole in the golf course. So there's definitely some opportunities for players to make bogey or potentially even double if you hit in the wrong spot.
And when you're looking at that kind of, you know, that sort of action, obviously you guys have had your TV tower locations established for years. But if I'm watching from home, what holes should I be looking for that you have cameras, you know, available for?
I really, it sounds kind of cliche. Everyone says the Masters doesn't start until Sunday the back nine, but I feel like our golf course is kind of the same way.
Okay.
You know, if you're able to catch the last nine holes, certainly on Sunday, there's going to be, it's going to be an action-packed leaderboard. We've got a lot of top players coming, and it's going to be close. I don't see anyone really running away with it this year with as good of a field as we have.
All right, well, let me take you away from the tournament and back to your practice facility for just a few minutes. We talk a lot with our head pros about what kind of challenges they're facing and really what kinds of things they're seeing from their students. I'm imagining your place is no different than any other. Everybody comes in and says, hey, I want 10, 20 more yards on my drive. And you try to argue with them and say, you really could shave 3 or 4 strokes off with the short game and be better off. How do you get somebody to change their mindset as an instructor?
I think a lot of it comes with the opening interview with the student and trying to find out what are they really looking for. You know, are they really looking for 10, 20 yards, or is it the big thing that I get from people is I'm looking for consistency. So consistency, just like you touched on, I mean, there's the short game. You know, there's days that I hit it well and days I don't, but it really all boils down to how you putt and chip. And you know, even talking to some of the tour players and picking their brains about how do they take a round where they're not hitting it well and still shoot even far, and it all comes back to the short game. So I think, you know, a lot of times making those comparisons to the tour players and talking to the golfers that I teach about just watching the tour players when they're at a facility and looking at how much time they dedicate to the short game, it seems to me it's two-thirds, if not three-quarters of the time they're out there, they're just putting and chipping. So I think when you tell them, hey, this is what the best players in the world do, you're able to convince them to work on the short game, and then ultimately they'll see lower scores. And I think really the lower scores leads to having more fun and wanting to play more golf, and that's what most golfers are in search of.
Yeah, I mean, chicks dig the long ball, but, you know, before I let you go, I mean, if I, you know, I'm an average hacker at a, you know, 18 to 22 handicap, how would you tell me to divide 1 hour of work on the practice round?
I like to start at the short game area and work on chipping and just consistent ball contact. So if I only had 1 hour, I would probably spend 30 minutes around the short game area, kind of getting some feel going, seeing how the greens are reacting. Really only spend probably 15, 20 minutes hitting ball to just loosen up and start with the wedges, and then kind of moving to the middle irons before hitting a few drives. And then I'd spend probably the last 10 or 15 minutes on the putting green, just kind of getting a feel for my stroke and really just getting a feel for the speed of the greens again. You know, I'm not going to spend be too worried with making putts from 10 and 20 feet as much as I'm just trying to lag putts up there and get a feel for the speed and, you know, how the grain is and kind of condition of the turf. But if I only had 1 hour, it would probably be 3/4 of the time focused on the short game.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck with the Zurich Classic, and we'll talk to you soon.
Really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.